Here we go. Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. We are injury attorneys. But for this show, we're here for you to answer your questions on any legal subject, solve your problems on any legal subject. Doesn't matter what it is. It can be divorce. It can be estates. It can be property boundaries. It can be restraining orders. We don't care. Even though we're injury attorneys in our day lives, our radio life, right here is for you. Our telephone number, 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. And in the mountains, you can call us at 970-457-1009. Welcome to all of our listeners, north, south, east, and west. We pretty much got you covered. Pretty much got you covered. You can ask us any question you want to. And by the way, guess what? We've redesigned our website, championsofthepeople.com. It's easier to use. But what's important for this show is that you can go to championsofthepeople.com right now, and the first thing you get to do is comment on our radio show. Anything you'd like to suggest, anything you'd like to criticize, anything you'd like to hear about in the future, a subject you want us to talk about, you can fill it right in. You can give us a review. It takes no more than about 15 seconds. That's okay, isn't it? That's all right, 15 seconds. And you can fill it in, send it in. If you want to hear a subject in a week, if you want to have somebody on the show, if you want to have a particular area covered, we're glad to do it. 303-713-8255. And yesterday we did a show on neck injuries, and we're going to talk a little bit about neck injuries, how insurance companies look at neck injuries. You know, you don't want to ever hear, you know, hi, I'm the insurance company for the at-fault party. Hi, I'm the insurance company for the person who hits you and ruined your life and gave you permanent neck problems. I'm that insurance company. And guess what? We're not going to pay you. Or we're going to try to beat you and defeat you. And we're going to do surveillance on you. And next week's show, not tomorrow morning, but the next week's show is going to be on surveillance. What does that mean? And what does it mean for you? Can they actually spy on you? That's coming up. So don't forget to go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. You can fill out the questionnaire. You can send in your suggestions, criticisms, any subjects you want to cover. It's all there for you. It's been redesigned. This is a Law Talk show. We're going to talk law with Alan right now. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning. How are you guys doing this morning?
Doing well, Alan. Thanks.
Good. Number one, I want to thank you for the information that I received for concussions.
Good. I hope it helped you.
Yeah, it did.
We sent you a disc, didn't we?
You did.
Right, and then a sound bite from the part of the show. Well, good. You're welcome.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I have another question. I'm having a new roof placed on my home. The insurance company is sending us a check, but they're putting the first mortgage and the second mortgage names on the check. So what we'll have to do is send the check to the first mortgage, and when that returns, send it to the second mortgage, and then we can start replacing the roof. Is that proper, or?
Well, here's the thing.
Excuse me for interrupting, but it seems like a lot of paperwork, and my main concern is that the bank may take that proceeds and apply it toward the principal or the interest.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, I want to be clear that I'm not trying to put any money in my pocket. I just want the roof replaced without going through the hassle of all the paperwork.
Are you talking to a specific adjuster? Have you made contact with the adjuster and how they're doing the check, Alan?
Well, we spoke to them yesterday, and that's basically what they're doing. They're writing a check to us, but they're putting the mortgage company's names on a check as well. So they would have to sign off on the check.
Okay. Here's the reason. What goes on is they, of course, the beneficiaries of your insurance policy you have on your house include the first and second mortgage. And they're named as beneficiaries, so if something happens to the house, the loans you have get paid off with the insurance proceeds. When you have work done to the roof and they are going to pay, the insurance company is giving you the money to pay, the problem they get into is they start saying, okay, how do we know this? The roofer's getting paid, or how do we, and we have a duty to send the money to every beneficiary on the policy. Now, a lot of times the way to get around that is to say, well, wait a minute, we're going to pay the roofer with this money, so make the check payable to us and the roofer and not to the first and second mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Because then the insurance company can be assured that the roofer is going to get paid. Another way is you paying the roofer and then saying, here's my proof that I paid the roofer, reimburse me. And sometimes, of course, the amount's different based on what the roofer's done and if the roofer's and how the roofer is carrying out the job.
You know, that second option doesn't seem to be fair. You know, why should we lose interest on $10,000 or $15,000?
Well, I agree with you. It's not fair. And the problem you've got with the sending this money to the mortgage companies is the mortgage companies are going to look and they're going to turn around and say, we want to make sure the roofer gets paid because we don't want a mechanics lien being placed on your house where they haven't gotten paid. So they are giving you a long process. And I think this is one where you need more discussion with the adjuster to discuss about saying, look, the real secret here is getting the roofer paid. And if the roofer is willing to give the necessary documents to show that he is getting paid or he will get paid or that he's gotten paid or he's getting money from the insurance proceeds, then there's no reason to put the mortgage companies on the lien or on the check.
You know, bottom line from the insurance company perspective is that the fact that they want the money to go to repair the issue, the problem, and not to go in somebody's pocket. Having talked to you before, you don't even sound like that kind of person, but that's their issue.
And I understand that, and I tried to make that clear to them when I spoke to them. You know, it doesn't make sense to me though. Basically what they're saying is that if I make an improvement on my home, even if I finish my basement, I've got to get their approval.
Well, in the case where you get insurance proceeds on your house insurance. The reason that has to happen is because if you pulled out your policy, you'll see the beneficiaries are the mortgage companies are included.
Right.
And because they're included, they're supposed to be people who also get the check. In other words, they're saying, look, we're just making the money payable to all the beneficiaries. And that's Alan and the first mortgage and the second mortgage. You guys fight it out on who gets it and what it gets used for. You know, there are other ways to do this. Let me ask on the roof you're getting fixed. Are you getting the money in advance of the roof getting fixed, or has the work been done and has the roofer certified the work's been done?
Well, the work has not been done yet, and we won't do the work until after the normal hail season.
That's a smart move, really.
You know, we have time, but, you know, I'm getting back to my concern is that, you know, all the paperwork and, banks and humans and everybody else makes errors. And I just don't want that money to go toward the principal or the interest.
Well, I think you're going to have a bigger problem than that. I think you're going to have trouble with the mortgage companies agreeing to sign it off on the check and give you the money anyway. Because normally you'd send it saying sign off the check. One thing you don't do is you don't sign the check, Alan.
No.
You don't endorse the check on the back until and when you send it to them. So they can't take that money and apply it to anything. And the best they can do is sign the check and send it back to
you. You're going
to
do it by certified mail. And usually the good news, if some of these mortgage companies are tuned into the fact their name's on there and they got to sign it and give it back to you.
Hey, let's get your number, Alan, and help you off the air again on this one, okay?
Okay, I appreciate it.
We're going to help you because maybe we can talk to the adjuster and get you a different route on how to handle that check.
Well, I would appreciate the help. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold. Thanks for the call,
okay,
Alan.
Thanks.
We appreciate it. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We are injury attorneys in our day lives, our radio lives. We're right here for you on any legal subject. Go to our website. It's been revised and updated. championsofthepeople.com. The name hasn't changed. championsofthepeople.com. You can make suggestions about this show. You can take a quick survey. It takes no more than 15 seconds. We'd love your feedback, and we love you being here. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we've been doing this show for years to help you, help the ordinary person. That's what it's all about. Don't forget about our website, new and revised, same name, championsofthepeople.com. If you go to championsofthepeople.com, you can give a review of this show. You can ask, give us suggestions. You can tell us subjects you'd like to cover, what you'd like to see on the show, all that good stuff. Our telephone number here, 303-713-8255, 713-8255. And in the mountains, welcome 94.1 FM KEZZ. The telephone number is 970-457-1009. And don't forget about the Barry and Larry show, the Consumer Real Estate Show follows our show. We've dealt with these people. They're very professional, very knowledgeable. Their expertise is unquestioned. So if you have a real estate matter, you can always call them and talk to them. Our telephone number, 303-713-8255. Let's talk about neck injuries. Neck injuries. So that, you know, the main, we did the show, it's going to air tomorrow morning in a variety of stations on neck injuries. Oh, neck injuries, how boring, humdrum. You know, and some doctors or medical people call it whiplash. And then the insurance companies for years tried to make the word whiplash very, that, you know, evil word, that's bad, whiplash, you must be a fraud, you must be a fake, you must be making this up. But the point of the matter is, if you've got a neck injury, if you have chronic neck pain from a trauma, from a car crash, that's what we normally deal with. And usually the cervical part of the spine, the neck is injured, and usually the lumbar part of the spine, L3, L4, L5, S1, is injured, and there's a reason for that. The mechanism of injury in the car accident causes injury with rapid acceleration and deceleration. But the point you need to know is this. You better know the medicine on your neck injury or you're going to get nowhere. Your attorneys better know the medicine on neck injuries, because what happened to the neck? No, I mean specifically what happened to the neck. You got a sore neck. Was it the insurance company's default to, like a computer system, to you must have a muscle injury. You must have a muscle-related headache. You must have a muscle tension headache. Well, what if it's more than a muscle injury? What if you have pain down your arms, radiculopathy, a radiculitis, traveling pain down your arms, numbness, tingling? What if you have an atlantoaxial injury at C1 and C2 in the top of your neck? You better know what you're talking about, because, you know, Brad, we've learned in this year and from years in this business that you got to be specific when you try to prove a claim. You can't just say, I've got a neck injury, or I've got a sore neck, or a sore back. You've got to be very specific.
Well, that's right. And this is where you need to start understanding some of the language is being used when people are talking about these kind of things. Because, for instance, when we talk about a whiplash, now most of you are sitting there thinking whiplash doesn't mean much. Whiplash can be permanent injury. Whiplash can be a very significant injury. Yes, a whiplash can be a small injury, but it can be very significant. It's the same thing as a sprain. We think of sprains as being small injuries, but when they can be very, very significant. They can last a lifetime. So you can't just judge it by the name that's put on it. You have to identify what the injury is and what's going on. Insurance companies love to tell you, hey, you know, that you already had a bunch of problems with your neck and your spine, or look at it, we've done an MRI and look at what a mess your spine was. And so, gee, we're not responsible for what happened. But if you've been living pain-free, there certainly is responsibility.
Right, and all you doctors out there and educated personnel, you know about atlantoaxial injury, C1, C2. You know about vertical displacement of the atlas, sometimes the widening of the C1, C2 facet joint. All this is very important when you prove your injury, when you prove a neck injury. You better know it, and your attorney better know it, because I guarantee you the insurance company has computer programs where they know it. We're a law talk show. You can call us. And right now we're going to talk law with Jeannie. Good morning, Jeannie. Welcome to Bell and Pollock.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What can we do for you?
So we got a friend whose lease was ended. It was a one-year contract, but the company where he was renting from did not give him a renewal notice.
All
so
right.
It's our assumption that the original terms of the lease hold, except where the part where it ended. And we're thinking that it goes to a periodic tenancy where it's a month to month beyond that, and they're telling him that in order to get out of your lease, it's a 60-day notice.
Okay, so your friend had a one-year lease, and then the year ended, correct?
Yep, the lease ended.
And the landlord wants them to stay and wants to bind them?
Yeah, because, and they never gave him a renewal notice.
Right.
So our advice to him was the original term of the lease holds, except where it ends.
Okay, got you. So All right, so you're homing in on the right thing there, Jeannie. So, yes, the one-year lease, what's critical here, obviously, are the terms written into the lease, okay? And we'd be glad to look at that. But absent that, we'll get to that in a minute. The terms of the lease control, but if it's a year lease, the lease is over with. Usually, in the contract, all other things being equal, there you go, all other things being equal, when the lease is over, it's over with. We're done. It's a contract, and it's for a finite time period, and we're over.
And your friend, if your friend stays there after the lease is done, your friend's known as a holdover tenant, and probably does, under normal circumstances, absent what the contract might say, and everything's really governed by the contract, does become a month-to-month tenant at will with respect to the property. But the problem you've got is you're dealing with a situation where the lease itself might vary the terms of what normally would be the circumstances.
So here's the question, Jeannie. So we'll be glad to look at this lease for you. No problem. Obviously, we can't do it on the air, but we'd be glad to. So you've got the set law, you've got statutory law and common law that says the lease is over with. It's done. So the landlord can't come in and say, well, you know, you're bound for another 6 months, whatever, unless the lease says that.
Okay.
If the lease says, well, hey, you know, in the end of the year, if you didn't give us notice, you're going to terminate this. Therefore, you've leased this again automatically for, I'm making this up, 6 months. 8 months, another year, that's a whole different animal, okay? And so in pure law, 1 year, it's over with. But the lease language can change that.
Does your friend have a copy of the lease that was signed?
I'd have to check with him to see.
Okay, see if he does. If not, it's a simple thing of telling the lease company we want a copy of the lease. Right. And have them supply a copy of the lease and get it to us. We're happy to review it for you and tell them what his rights are under it.
And normally they do have a 60-day notice.
Right.
But the whole issue is they never, and they have called them several times and said, hey, we'd like a renewal notice, or are you going to send us a renewal notice? What's going on? And they didn't return his calls, so then he went out and searched for, you know, something to move into, and then he went and said, okay, I'm going to give you my 30-day notice. Good, upstanding guy. That's trying to do the right thing.
Right.
And now they're telling him, you know what, I'm sorry, but if you do leave, you're going to pay us 60 days worth of rent.
Okay, so your friend now is obligated on a new place as well?
Nope, he hasn't done it, hasn't pulled the trigger yet on that. He's doing the right thing.
All right, I'm breathing a little bit better, easier for him.
But they're trying to stick him with either stay there for another year or give a 60-day notice, or they're trying to stick him with you keep staying here until you give us a 60-day notice.
He has to give a 60-day notice, yep.
Well,
they're telling him, give us a 60-day notice and you can do what you want.
That's very rare.
That would be rare.
Usually when a lease ends, when it's a one-year lease and that's the end of the term, the occupancy of the premises, that's the end. I mean, unless the lease got some other language in it, I think that really we need to get a copy of the lease. If your friend's got it, tell him to get it, and we can look at it right away. Or if he doesn't have it, let's get it from the landlord who's saying you're going to have to pay this 60 days and say, show us.
The normal thing, Jeannie, is that the lease says you got a lease for 1 year. If you want to extend the lease, you have to give us, the landlord, notice, and there's usually a time period you have to give us at least 60 days before the lease expires, example. And so that's the normal thing. It's not normal the way you're describing it. It could be done in the lease language, but it's just not normal.
Right.
Right, right. And it's a fairly large company. It's a rental company. It's an apartment complex.
Yes.
So it does. It frustrates me as his friend, because I did call in and ask if they had, you know, 3-bedroom units available.
Right.
No, we don't have any available at this time, but if we do have a 60-day lease, if someone gives us their notice, then we'll take your name and number and let you know. And I'm going, okay, I know exactly what you're doing, because he tried to contact you to tell you, hey, am I getting a renewal notice? What's going on?
I think you got it figured out, Jeannie. You know what they're doing, and guess what? They know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
And guess what, Jeannie? We'll help you and your friend, okay?
Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome. So I'll tell you what, we're going to put you on hold.
Okay.
You're going to give Kevin your information. We're going to call you. We're going to get a copy of the lease, and we're going to solve this issue.
Thank you.
Well,
okay.
Thank you.
We'll see what we can do.
All right.
Right on.
I'm going to put you on hold. Give Kevin your information. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. This is the only show of its kind Our telephone number, 303-713-8255. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. You now can go there. It's been modified. You can give us a review of this show. You can give us suggestions. You can give us criticism. You can give us ideas. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. We're ready to improve for you because we are your champions of the people. Good morning. Welcome back. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, 303-713-8255. Pull up your legal chair, get your legal coffee and legal bagel. We're cooking on this air. And speaking of food and cooking, we're going to have Eric join us. Good morning, Eric. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
What's going on at Caitlin's Restaurant?
Oh, my gosh. We have so many things. Let me get started. Okay, so Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., we run an early bird special. That's two eggs, our hash browns, one sausage patty, two slices of thick bacon, or half a ham slab. It's only $5.99. That's Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., early bird special. Our breakfast special for the week is going to be our breakfast quesadilla. That's a customer request for the week. It's two flour tortillas, scrambled eggs, shredded cheese, your choice of ham, bacon, or sausage. That comes with lettuce, tomato, guacamole, sour cream on the side. Really tasty thing. That's our breakfast special for the week. And our lunch special, we don't have our umbrellas up today, unfortunately, but we do have our chili bowl. We have our scratch-made beans, red or green chili, mixed cheese, sour cream. You can get chicken or veggies or carne adobada. That's our slow-roasted pork. Or our carne asada, which is our seasoned steak on top of that, if you like. That's our lunch special for the week. And we're going to do a little different this year for Mother's Day. We're going to run a Mexican shrimp cocktail for Mother's Day. It's Clamato juice, fresh avocados, diced tomatoes, cilantro, red onions, the shrimp, of course, a little bit of Tabasco, some horseradish, a lime on the side, and a side of tortilla chips. Tried it out yesterday. It's amazing.
And a partridge in a pear tree, sounds like to me. All right.
Hey, Eric, for Mother's Day, can I get like a steak to go with that shrimp cocktail?
You can absolutely get a steak. We do flat iron steaks. They're 6 ounces. Cook them to the temperature of your choice. Really good. Come on down. And don't forget bottomless mimosas. Bottomless mimosas, only $10. All the time. Come on down and check us out. Can't beat it.
I'm still trying to wrap my mind around this early bird special from 6 to 10. 10. 10 in the morning.
Well, we're early birds. We get here early. We start at 6.
I know you do.
What I don't understand is why you don't have those umbrellas up today.
Yeah, what's going on?
If I want to eat my chili bowl out on the deck, I'd be able to.
It might freeze over if you're out there. You can give it a shot. If you come in and you want to sit on the deck, I'll try to find a server to come out and help you out. It's a little cold, but...
Where are you located, Eric?
We're 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. That's one block east of Colorado Boulevard. That's in the Glendale Shopping Center.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Those chili bowls are fantastic.
Sounds great. Yeah, I agree with you. Homemade red chili, homemade green chili. We're going to talk a lot with Steve. Good morning, Steve. Thank you for holding. What can we do for you?
Good morning. I got a friend of mine told me on settlements with reaching a settlement amount that they have this rule called the collateral source rule. And if a person isn't familiar, that this adjuster can ask a person about payments from their work, or from their uninsured motors, or if they're retired, that they're not. It can affect the amount of that settlement. Can you inform us or the general public on this collateral source rule or the California exception?
Sure. So I'll hit it first, and then Brad can. I'll hand the baton off to Brad. The collateral source rule. So what these insurance companies want to do is they're going to settle with you, let's just say, for $10,000. That's our example. They want to know whether or not you've got Social Security disability payments, whether you got Social Security payments, whether you got health insurance, whether the health insurance is going to pay the medical bills, whether you got a lien, how the medical bills are going to be paid. Do you have other sources of income? And all this shouldn't be even a factor, because the value of your claim is based on the value of your injury. And to people that don't really know or aren't educated, then they don't have the right to get into a lot of these collateral sources of income or benefits. One more thing. We have an entire show on our website, championsofthepeople.com, of exactly what you need to know and do. Your first phone call to the adjuster. People can go to there and listen to. Brad, what do you got?
Okay. Here's what happens. Obviously, you get in an accident, and when you're in an accident and somebody's hurt you, and you're trying to determine whether or not you're getting medical care. And the medical care is being supplied a lot of times by your own insurance company if you have a good med pay. It's being paid for by your health insurance company, maybe being paid for by a retirement plan, which is known as ERISA. A number of different places may be helping you with your medical bills. Those companies will exercise, except for the med pay, all the other companies will exercise what they call a subrogation right, saying they want to be reimbursed. And they want to be reimbursed the amount they're actually paying to the healthcare provider, which is more than the healthcare provider charges. Now, what happens when you get in the fight with your insurance company, with the at-fault party's car insurance company, is they start wanting to know how much you're really paying for the medical bills. They are not entitled to know that.
Correct.
Okay, that's where the rub comes. And they say, well, under collateral source, we're going to have to pay those people. And the answer is, under collateral source, they may have a right to get paid, but when I say those people, I mean the ones who have actually advanced the money to pay your bills. But the bottom line is that all gets taken care of after you've reached your settlement, after you've determined what your case is worth. To determine what your case is worth, you determine how much the healthcare provider charges and the usual and customary fee the healthcare provider will charge. So what you're looking at is, and this is where it gets kind of touch and go, Steve. Let's say you go to the hospital, and you go down to the hospital and you need some care, and the hospital will send a bill, and a lot of times you'll get an explanation of benefits that says the charge the hospital has for this particular care they gave you is $5,000. Your health insurance company only paid $2,000. For that, because they have a deal with the hospital to have reduced rates because they send so many of their insureds over to the hospital throughout the year. Mm-hmm. When it comes to collecting in your case against the at-fault party and the car insurance company, you're entitled to the $5,000. The car insurance company is not even really entitled to know about the $2,000. They're not entitled to know the lesser amount.
And that's why they always want you to sign releases. Listen to our show. Ask us questions. The insurance company says, sign us a release. We can't adjust your claim unless you do. We can't pay you unless you sign our paperwork and our, quote, few forms. And when you do, they want to go get those records from the hospital or the provider themselves. They're not entitled to do that. And they want to get the billing so they can take advantage of the lower, in Brad's example, the $2,000 that was paid instead of $5,000. If you're injured, you're entitled to the retail value of your bills, meaning the $5,000. Are we answering your question, Steve?
Yes. Now, I've heard of some people's insurance company turning into an adversarial or whatever, where they don't really represent their client. Does that collateral rule come into effect there, too?
Well, first of all, I'm going to tell you something. We've preached for years. I'm going to tell you right now. The insurance company for the at-fault party is not your friend. They are your adversary. They are your enemy. You are at war. Bottom line. That's the answer I want to give you there.
And here's what happens. Yes, they will become adversarial, but you're going to have a lot of adversaries in this process. You get hurt in an accident today, Steve, and you go in. The first potential adversary you have is the hospital. Because the hospital is going to ask you all sorts of questions and maybe even give a questionnaire. And there's companies like Avectis and Xerox Corporation and collection companies that are going to want to know who the at-fault party is. Because they don't like these reductions. So they want to go straight to the at-fault party to try and get their money direct. And they'll disclose that information. Plus, a lot of times, they don't want to give the reduction to your health insurance company. They want to sue, or they want to proceed against the at-fault party. That's who they want to send the bill to, so they don't have to give the reduction that your health insurance company would require.
Which affects you because you're if the insurance company pays the full retail value of $5,000, in our example, you, the injured person, don't get that money.
So they're not entitled to any of that.
Right.
So, you know, when you go into the hospital, you look and say, here's my health insurance. That's it. The second thing you do is then all of a sudden you've got your own health insurance company that quite often wants to know, again, who is the at-fault party, because they want to go against the at-fault party, and they're telling you, we want this money back. And the problem they have is we have some laws out here that will call like the make-whole laws that they may not be entitled to the money back. So they become your adversary also. So when you get hurt in an accident, believe it or not, they're all coming down as being your adversaries because they're all looking for the higher amount of money that on a number of occasions, number one, you're entitled to the appropriate health care benefits from your insurance company. That means a reduced bill for the care. Number two, you're entitled to the difference between the amount charged versus the amount paid. And number three, when the company, your health insurance company, wants that money back, they're the collateral source. That's the other source you've used to collect your money. The first source is you're going after the people who hurt you. The collateral source is your insurance company. They may not be entitled to any of that money back if you have not been made whole through the process with the at-fault party.
Okay.
Pretty complicated, but yes, they can become your enemy, and that's why we've had to, our legislature has had to, and through common law, we've had many, many laws about bad faith from your own insurance company, where your own insurance company acts in bad faith by unreasonably delaying or denying your coverage or your payment of your benefits. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah. Now, the last part of my question, let's say a person doesn't have insurance, but they have Medicaid or Medicare, because it's best, just, I think, just to go to the hospital and tell them, I don't have any insurance.
Well, okay, Steve, we got a break coming up, but can you hold with us during the break? Because we'll get to that right after the break.
Yes.
Okay,
all
but,
right.
You know,
thanks.
So
that's a great
if you just stick with us, we'll appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, so you're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we're here for you, 303-713-8255. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. You can get any of our books for free, any of our books. And our first book was entitled Don't Get Hurt in the Same Accident Twice, once in the accident and again on the insurance claim. You can call Kevin right here, right now, and we'll send you a hard copy of it free. Our new revised website, championsofthepeople.com, you can give a survey of this show. Bell and Pollock will be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. It's time for Legal Rock and Roll. We are injury attorneys in our day lives, our radio lives. We're here for you, 303-713-8255. We have revised and updated our website, championsofthepeople.com. You can go there and give a critique of the show. You can give us feedback, any suggestions, anything you want to hear in the future, any subject you want to talk about. What would you like to do? If you want any of our books, they're free. Go to our website. You can download an a book free, or you can call Kevin right here, or you can call our law firm. We'll send you a hard copy free. What about insurance in Colorado? You'll find it. What about the myths about car accidents and insurance companies? You'll find them in our books. Right before the break, we were talking to Steve. Steve was talking about a collateral source doctrine, meaning if you're injured in a car crash or injured in a trauma, the insurance companies are trying to take advantage of the collateral source, meaning you bought insurance, now the insurance, you paid the premium for it, now the insurance company for the at-fault party wants to take a benefit of it. And then your last question, Steve, was about Medicare and Medicaid. Could we readdress that question, please, sir?
Yeah, if they come and say, well, Medicaid or Medicare paid for this, is that part of that collateral source rule, too?
It is, and so my take on this is Medicare and Medicaid have super statutory liens to be able to be paid back their money once you recover from the insurance company for the at-fault party. There are ways to work with these super statutory liens, and you have to, but they do have rights to be paid back some money.
Right. Now, Steve, what happens is in the Medicare and Medicaid both have portals. And what I mean by portals, you can get on the computer and you put in the necessary information. You can find out what bills they're paying for you and how much. This, once again, goes to the beginning part that you talked about, that when the doctor or the hospital, let's say the hospital again, charges $5,000 for the services and they send out a bill. If you're a Medicare or Medicaid recipient, they accept it, they're going to get maybe $1,000. And that $5,000 just hangs there. Now, Medicare and Medicaid have, as Gary said, super rights to be able to collect this money back, the $1,000 they paid. A lot of times, the car insurance company wants to know how much your Medicare or Medicaid bill is, because once again, they're going to try and negotiate you from that lower amount. They're not entitled to do that. So your step is to look and say no. And they'll want your Social Security number. They'll want to be able to get onto the portal. They'll want to get in that information. They'll want you to sign documents giving that. And they'll tell you the reason is because they have reporting requirements to Medicare and Medicaid, which they do. But those reporting requirements don't kick in until they're ready to settle with you. So once again, what you should be doing is you can get in the portal. You can get onto the computer and know what they're paying for you. You can know how much Medicare or Medicaid is paid, and you can also know how much the doctor and hospital have charged. That's your information, and you should not share that.
And in Brad's example, so the insurance company for the at-fault party, the one that caused the injury, wants to say to you, you didn't really have $5,000 hospital bill, so we're not going to consider that in the negotiations. What you really had was a Medicare bill, and they paid $1,000. So we're going to use that lower amount to pay you a lower amount. But under the Garden-Schwartz case, they can't do that. Under the Garden-Schwartz case, they have to negotiate with you based on the retail $5,000 of the bill. Are we making sense?
Yeah, so they can't take the discount or use it.
Correct.
You get that discount.
Yeah, get it.
And our Supreme Court and a Court of Appeals have explained why, and it makes really good sense. We don't have time to go into that now because we're going to have to be out in a few minutes. But it's very well reasoned. It makes good sense. But the thing is that the insurance companies don't like it, obviously. And they would rather pay the lesser amount. Now, a lot of times the way they do that is they say, we'll just pay your bills for you. Well, yeah, the reason they want to pay the bills direct rather than go through you is because they're going to pay the deduction, the reduced amount, and you'll never know it. The reason they want to know for negotiation purposes that lower amount is because then they can start by saying, you know, when you say, hey, my total bills are $15,000, they look and say, oh, but you only paid $7,000 of that, so we're only going to give you
credit.
We're only going to give you $8,000. We're going to give you $1,000 for the in addition to what you actually had to pay. When right off the top, you're really entitled to the $15,000.
Okay.
And they say, well, we have to report to Medicare and Medicaid. No, you don't need to report to Medicare and Medicaid till after our settlement. Once we reach a settlement and it's in writing, we're happy to give you what's called a conditional payments letter and to give you access to all the information to show how much of that money should go to Medicare and Medicaid.
But once you sign the forms to the at-fault insurance company, give them releases, they go get your records, they go get your bills, they go get your Medicare information, they get all this stuff, and then they've got the upper hand because you agreed, you consented, you signed it away. So listen to our show on our website, championsofthepeople.com. What you need to know and do before you ever make the first call to the insurance adjuster or before they call you, what do you really need to know? Guess we kind of got excited about this, Steve.
That's okay. I learned a lot.
Okay, man. Thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We're here to talk law. We're here to talk with you. It's a law talk show, not a political show. Right now, we're going to talk to Jerry. Good morning, Jerry. What can we do for you?
Good morning. I have a question about liability.
Yes, ma'am.
I fell at an apartment complex. I don't live there. My friend and I went to visit her friend. And when we were coming down the stairs, my leg gave way, and I fell down the stairs. I had a tibial fracture, a tibial plateau fracture of my right leg.
Right.
And I've been, you know, taking care of it. I have Medicare. And now I received a letter from Medicare saying somebody else may cover these bills. And I'm thinking, does the apartment complex have liability on this? I did not notify anybody there. They do not know me. And I was wondering if I should fill out this.
Well, let me ask you this, Jerry. When did this happen?
It happened at the end of January.
Okay, so there's still time to resurrect this. Potentially, you have a claim against the apartment complex for a dangerous condition that needs to be explored. that needs to be?
Go ahead. I don't think so, though. It wasn't anything that they did.
Okay, then if the stairs weren't defective, if they weren't uncared for, it was just your own leg, right?
Right.
That gave way. So there's probably no claim there against the apartment complex, okay? And so you're entitled to receive the treatment. And what Medicare or Medicaid wants to know is, are you going to recover money from a third party, i.e. the apartment complex? Because if you do, we want our money back. But if you have no claim, and it doesn't sound like you do, then they don't ever get their money back. They have to pay, period.
And just respond to them by saying there's no third party who's responsible for this.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I do complete the form they sent me and say, no, I've not done any action. And there, I don't think there's any... Why would I do that? There was nothing on their part that caused.
Well, then there's nothing. There's nothing there. I mean, you're not going to make it up. We're not going to make anything up. So that's the answer. There's no claim. And since there's no claim, there's no money to recover to pay them back, and so they don't get paid back.
So I'm not throwing the complex under the bus by saying where they are.
Just complete the form. Tell them nobody. You're not suing anybody. Nobody else is responsible. And they'll be happy with that. They'll catalog it, and they won't bother you again. They'll just continue paying the bills they need to pay.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you,
Jerry, thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
All right. Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We are injury attorneys in our day lives, our radio lives. We're here for you. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. You can listen to the show on what you need to do or know before you talk to the insurance adjuster. You can push the button that tells you how you prepare for a car accident before one even happens. And now we've got a new form in there where you can critique this show, give us suggestions. championsofthepeople.com, because what? We are your champions of the people. No internet.